Welcome to the podcast series of the Winning Peace Conference, which will take place on the 11th and 12th October 2018 at the German Federal Foreign Office in Berlin. You can find info about the registration program and invited speakers on our website, win-peace-conference.berlin. The link is in the description of the podcast. I'm happy to have Joseph Siemer directly here in the German Federal Foreign Office in Berlin to discuss about his work as director of the First World War Centenary Partnership Program, an organization working under the patronage of the French government, which is responsible to initiate, organize, and coordinate the commemoration of the First World War in France. Good morning.
Good morning.
Before talking about the work you do at the Centenary Partnership Program, would you present yourself in a few words?
I was trained as a historian and I've been working in different assignments for the government in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I was in charge of heritage at the Ministry for Defense, in charge of the policy of our archives, museums, and I was running the commemoration program. That's where I have been asked to draft a report by our president in 2011 to
Nicolas Sarkozy.
Yes, to prepare the centenary. I drafted my report approved, and then I was asked to create the organization to deliver the program. Mm-hmm.
What are you actually doing? What is the work that you're doing at this program?
We have had 2 years to think about the commemoration, and so that was a very very interesting. I mean, to have 2 years for planning between 2012 and 2014. So we have been able to implement structures all over the country because a lot of the energy for the centenary is coming from local governments and civil society. So we have spent a lot of time to put in place networks, local networks, local committees. And also in the academic circles, we have done a lot of planning with our scientific committee. We have implemented also a network with academies to put in place local work in connection with schools and universities. So when the commemoration started in 2014, we had a very strong local infrastructure, which helped us to deliver an official centenary brand and to deliver also some small grants with money given to us by the government. So we were able to really address at a very grassroots level various actors and players of the centenary. I think the most important thing to understand in our attempt was to avoid the centenary to stay between the hands of traditional players, such as a veterans organization. Of course, they are a key element. But for us, the key issue was to expand the range and variety of actors involved in the commemoration. Because in France, as you are aware, the memory of the Great War is rooted in local communities and in families. Families are the millions of people searching for online archives about their own stories. And that's one of the dynamic of the centenary in the country. Very, very important constituency. So we've been thinking a lot about how to address these people because they are the driving force of the centenary. Local governments are the other driving force because this is where the legacy, the heritage, the souvenir is rooted in French public memory. We also implemented some connection in our embassy through our cultural services. For us, the centenary was also a way to address academic circles abroad through organizing conference seminars with local historians, with international universities, with cultural players abroad. So we've spent again a lot of time putting in place networks and channels to be able to interact with a lot of people. So this is probably our singularity. We had to deliver a national commemoration, but we always had in mind that it was a shared responsibility with a lot of people. The state, the so-called centralized state in France is not alone anymore. Mm-hmm. And he has to interact with a lot of people, mm-hmm. with the media, with TV, with social media, with universities, with school, with local private organization. So that was in France, really a puzzle to put in place. And abroad also, because France is the... at the center of also an international network. It has been a global stage for this. The centenary is the first global commemoration mm-hmm. of modern era. And France has had the responsibility also to host more than 50 countries mm-hmm. coming mm-hmm. in our country to commemorate their events.
Because the battles took place
because
mostly.
A lot of the battles mm-hmm. on the Western Front, and because France was a carrefour for Indians, for Australians, for people from New Zealand, for people from Canada, from Italy, from Czech Republic, from even from Russia. And we had to address all these memories, all these stories. Mm-hmm. So we have put in place an organization that was able to welcome and to address this variety of experience, and of course also to deliver domestic commemoration. So I think we were put mm-hmm. in, we were in a special position. If you look at a broader view about, you know, what did Australia, what Germany did, what UK, we always had this sort of double stage. One was our commemoration in connection with, you know, local actors, with probably a weaker state role for the state, mm-hmm. But also a permanent interaction with at least 30 countries mm-hmm. working in France. So that's the general physiognomy mm-hmm. Of what happened. So in my understanding, the specificity of the centenary is, of course, this global commemoration, this permanent interaction between at least 50 countries to deliver together. And the other, I think, characteristic is, of course, this multi-annual the length of mm-hmm. the commemoration mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I mean we started international planning as early as 2011. I remember organizing a meeting in Paris when no one had yet an organization to deliver the centenary, but we felt still that we had to gather some people from foreign affairs, from cultural department, from different countries as early as 2011. Mm-hmm. And we, most of us, are still working together today. And now we are really doing a sort of international planning for the last events of the centenary, mm-hmm. which will take place between the end of 2018 and early stages of 2019. So that's really the specificity of this commemorative experience.
Mm-hmm. And so you started working on it in... as early as 2011, and you were among the first to do so. How, at that time, how did you imagine that the centenary would look like? Because today it's easy to say, okay, it's a huge international event, and a lot of countries are involved. Was it clear to you? 5 years ago.
I'm sorry, but I have to admit, and you can check that in my report to the president, which has been translated in English and in German, and I hope you can find that online. Mm-hmm. And I have to confess that most of what happened, I anticipated in my report. I know that's not very modest to say that, but unfortunately, this is the truth. I think I anticipated a lot of what came. This outbreak, especially the international attention to the century. You could feel and notice already. I have been welcome in France, welcoming the first Australians who came in 2008, 2009. Interested by the legacy on the Western Front, interested to design museums, interested to improve visitors' facilities everywhere on the battlefield. So you could feel things. And my report was not so much about inventing something, but about telling some key people in the public sphere about what was coming. Mm-hmm. The centenary was a wave coming, a big wave, and I think if my report was helpful, it was just to describe the scale and the intensity of this wave coming. But you can check that yourself if you want
we'll have to. It will be in
English or German.
It will be in the description of the podcast, of course, so that everybody can check
if
you're telling the truth. So we will be talking about the Australian commemoration with history and John Beaumont in another podcast. So we will have the opportunity to address this issue, which is really, really exciting.
That's absolutely.
I'd be interested to know to hear you a little bit more about the trends of this huge commemorative event. I mean, are we commemorating the same thing today as we were commemorating it 2014, or do you see differences?
Yes, there are many differences. 2014 was the early stages of the commemoration, and a lot of countries did not understand why it was important to commemorate the beginning of the war. A lot of countries were surprised.
For example,
I cannot do name and shame, but I think, for instance, our British colleagues, or let's say Commonwealth countries, at an early stage thought that we would only commemorate the battles, the big battles, and then the end of the war. And I think that was a difference between France and the majority of these countries, which we were not only commemorating battles, a change, a major change of the century, an experience shared not only by armies but by the society. I think what we achieved in 2014 was to involve most of the public in a reflection about what kind of impact this war had on their lives, on their activities. It was a sort of a social approach we wanted to promote of the commemoration. We said a guerre de société, and that's why we had to look at the beginning of the war, because it's like when you look at for instance, at the French Revolution. The French Revolution of 1789 was a major change in our modern history, and I think the Great War is pretty like the same for the 20th century. So we have to look at the roots of the events, and not at the end of the revolution, but at the beginning. Why did it start? What happened? What did it change? And the landmark was 2014, not 2018. So this was one difference we had. And I was actually pleased also to see that we shared that with Germany. Because if you look in the way Germany addressed the commemoration in 2014, it was a regional government who really pushed the not maybe the commemoration, but the idea that Germany had to look back to this past, to this legacy, not only from a military perspective, because a lot took place here in Germany in museums about art, about even philosophy, research, literature. It was a very, very interesting and innovative approach to commemoration, very decentralized, a bit like in France, and not military. It was a social approach of the commemoration. It was where family had a key role, the media, the press wanted to understand and address this issue. 2014 is a year or so of the book published by Christopher Clark in Germany, which I think he already sold something like 400,000 copies of the book in Germany, which is something which was completely unexpected. So that was 2014, a difference, a question: should we commemorate the beginning? What should be commemorated and how? Should we? Our answer was yes. How? Not only with military ceremonies, but with the public, in a very decentralized approach. Why? Again, because it's the Great War legacy is not only about battles, because it changed so much things in our society, in the way we live today. So that was I think the questions we had in mind and the experience we shared in 2014. Finally, most of the countries did actually organize events in 2014. For instance, Australia had a commemoration in August in Albany, I think, which is a place where the first boats and troops left Australia for its first military experience abroad. UK did an international ceremony in Mons in Belgium to mark its first combat experience. But the most interesting thing for me, and we will have to look back to this, was what happened in Germany. Just here in Berlin in 2014, I think there were more than 20 exhibitions in Berlin's museum and cultural centers and at several levels and stages. And for me, that was totally unexpected. Nobody saw that coming, and that was very, very interesting. Now, if you look at 2018 to answer your question, there is something new, which we are, of course, commemorating the end of the war. But some countries, Eastern Europe, from Eastern Europe, are commemorating their birth or rebirth or independence. And that's a new item in the commemoration. That's a new... In 2016, we commemorated bloody battles and losses of young men and destructions. And in 2018-19, we commemorate battles and losses, but also more positive events for them. If you look at Slovakia, Czech Republic, Poland, these people are now celebrating something, not only commemorating, they are celebrating proto-armies, proto-states, and that kind of thing. So that's a new approach to the commemoration. I mean, we have newcomers, let's say, new players, new way of thinking, and we have to include them in the global landscape of the commemoration. And of course, now we are heading to November 11th. The key issue is what we are commemorating and what kind of message we can deliver, because November 11th is not the end of the war, it's not peace, it's just the end of combat on the Western Front. And of course, we can see that the 2019 the treaties issue is also invited in the reflection about November 11th. So November 11th, 2018, will carry a lot of questions in also connection with the situation of today's international stage.
I would like to address this question at the end.
So this is just to tell you the difference between 2014, between the questions we had to address in 2014 and now what is coming for the next few months about the end of the commemoration. Again, the landscape has changed.
Commemorating, remembering, there are a lot of almost synonyms to talk about what you are doing, what we are doing in 2014, 2018. But I'd be interested to hear you talking about what we are doing actually when we are commemorating an event. Because when we mark an anniversary of an event, of a battle or something, we do not only collectively remember something that happened in the past, but we also assign a meaning to this particular event. So from your point of view, what is it? What does it mean to commemorate something, and can you address this question a little bit and talk about this?
It's a very difficult question. I cannot answer on behalf of Australian people or Canadian people. When Mr. Trudeau came to France in 2017, he was chairing the 100th anniversary of the Battle of Vimy. Mm-hmm. Vimy doesn't mean a lot for French people. I mean, it's in the Pas-de-Calais. There is a huge monument designed in the late 20s, early 30s. I don't remember exactly. The Canadians have designed a visitor center for people and school children and students who come each year. Now, and they gathered 23,000 people mm-hmm. for this ceremony. We have never been able to gather more than 3,000 or 4,000 people to a French mm-hmm. ceremony. So the meaning for them, it's different. The sense of this Vimy anniversary, mm-hmm. it's about the birth of their nation. It's about the birth of their national identity. Mm-hmm. It's about a story about heroism that, and they decided to root this in the Vimy anniversary.
Which is
in France.
Which is interesting.
Because before that, they were fighting under the British mm-hmm. crown and all for the Queen, and they feel that they became an independent nation on the battlefield of Vimy. For the Australians, it's pretty like the same. It's a bit more complex because, as you know, they use this Anzac Day, mm-hmm. which is a they merge two major experience. One is in Turkey, mm-hmm. In the beaches of Gallipoli, their first landing, their mm-hmm. first international combat experience in Turkey on April 2015. And they merged that with a major event on the Western Front, which is also took place the same day, but 3 years later in Villers-Bretonneux. Mm-hmm. So they take the April 25th, 1915, and April 25th, 1918, and that's Anzac Day. Mm-hmm. Anzac Day is the most important day in Australian mm-hmm. Public life. It's also a story about the birth of a nation, the birth of national identity, that and of a young nation. Mm-hmm. And today, if you go to Australia or you talk to Australian officials, they will tell you that the most important thing in the national identity is the Great War, is Anzac Day, is this effort from the Australian nation to send 500,000 volunteers abroad mm-hmm. To be an adult on the international stage. So these are two experiences. The American experience of the Great War is very different. We are now working with African Americans. They have opened, the Smithsonian Institution has opened a new museum in Washington. Mm-hmm. On African American history and culture, and we are working on an exhibition to tell the story of African Americans who came to France to fight and came back, and what the impact on the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. This war experience had on these people. Again, this is a very, very different story. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to African American today living in Mississippi, they have a very strong connection mm-hmm. and remembrance of the Great War mm-hmm. that most of the American people has totally forgotten, because what African American expected when they registered and they went to France to fight was liberty mm-hmm. And more rights mm-hmm. in American society, which they didn't get. So I cannot answer this question. Every country has its experience and his answers and questions mm-hmm. about the commemoration. Mm-hmm. Our mm-hmm. job as we are appointed by the government, well, that's my case, is to deliver a commemoration that makes sense for the French public, which includes as many experiences as possible. And I have to include many, many different stories in this frame. For instance, I had to address the issue of soldiers shot at dawn, which is a very difficult legacy in the French public life. About 700 French soldiers were shot for different reasons, some for espionage, some by mistake, some because they didn't want to go back to fighting. Something felt as a very strong injustice in the society. But on the other hand, we had to address the people who felt that France has lost had lost 1.5 million soldiers in this war, and we could not put at the same level the terrible experience of these 700 soldiers shot and the 1.5 million people who died in combat. My job is to deliver a story that can be shared by as many people as possible, including family history, including military history, and including a connection with all these countries that I mentioned, Australia, Canada, UK, because they are also part of our commemoration. Mm-hmm. They are sending to France millions of visitors. They are the public of most of our museums and battlefield tours. So the answer to your question cannot be the same for the 30 major countries of this commemoration.
So your job, as you said, is to produce a story, to produce a huge network of to give the opportunity to a lot of actors to commemorate in this network. And I'd be interested to know a little bit more about the experiences of the French culture of commemoration, because you had almost 30 years ago a big commemorative event in France, that is the bicentenary of the French Revolution.
Yes.
And I'd like to know, did you use this as a precedent for your work? Was it a model, or did you try to free yourself of this culture of commemoration? And how did it influence your work?
It was our model. I'm very clear about that. And it was very clear, and I have wrote it. One day, and I was thinking about all this coming, and I understood that the centenary would be, could be, as important, as big, as the bicentenaire of the French Revolution. And once I understood that, when I saw that clearly, I really started to design our efforts in connection with. But I talked a lot to the president, the chairman of the bicentenaire, who is a well-known historian, and I talked a lot to him. And I think the way I designed the structure was also clearly inspired, because I was a teenager. I was in school, and I remember clearly the impact on French social life of the bicentenaire. Yes, and I don't know. I felt the centenary could be as important.
And in comparison, did you try to inspire yourself from previous commemorations of the First World War? And I mean, in particular, the commemoration of the 50 years anniversary, 1964.
Not too much. I used some items because General de Gaulle was a veteran from the Great War,
from both, absolutely.
What I did not want, for different reasons, was to mix the two commemorations. Mm-hmm. So I think what we did with the centenary was a major change, with what was done before, which was to mix the two wars, as General de Gaulle called it, the guerre de 30 ans. Mm-hmm. I did not want this model because it was not appropriate in today's world to mix the heritage of the First World War and the heritage of the Second World War. So I think in that perspective, the major shift in our commemorative tradition was to get rid of this old model of the guerre de 30 ans, mm-hmm. Which for me clearly, and for the international scientific committee that I created to help me to design the centenary, was an old model, and we had to change. Mm-hmm. And I think we've brought a more modern and inclusive approach to this commemoration. We had to get rid of this old model, of General de Gaulle's model, which was obsolete. Mm-hmm. And also, it was not possible to work with Germany on the same basis if we had this mix of the two commemorations. Because we can mix and share a lot of our experience mm-hmm. on the Great War, on the First World War. And if you look at the what happened to the younger generation, the losses, the decentralized legacy. Second World War is something completely different if we want to share this experience.
Mm-hmm. And you just talked about the collaboration with Germany on this event, and it's no coincidence that you're here today in Berlin at the German Foreign Office, because France and Germany are work together on many questions and events of the century, and we are organizing this conference in Berlin. And this is just a part of this huge collaborative event. And I would like to hear you a little bit about this collaboration between French and German institutions, and in particular governmental institutions, that because we know that state leaders such as François Mitterrand and Helmut Kohl, or nowadays Emmanuel Macron and Angela Merkel, have met many times at commemorative events and produced a strong narrative of reconciliation and of rejection of military conflicts between their two countries. So I would like to know first why in contemporary politics history has such an important place, which is not the case 100 years ago. It's really something that we are experiencing in this 20 and 21st centuries. And why do heads of two of the most powerful states in the world publicly and officially get involved in commemorative events? Can you tell us a little bit about this collaborative work?
Well, you are raising many very important and different issues, and I'm not sure I can address everything at the same time. But what I can tell you is we've been working hard at the very early stage of our planning to design a strong Franco-German narrative mm-hmm. for this commemoration. It has been a bit difficult at the beginning, because I think Germany was surprised that they did not anticipate this commemoration here at the federal level, nor at the more regional level. In 2013, something was really clearly coming from lenders and their interest to go back to this memory. And I think people here in Berlin started to understand, and also a lot of international actors were asking Germany to start planning for events in 2014, not only in France, in the UK and elsewhere. And I think people here at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs understood that there was a real issue and they had to address. So they started the planning, and we delivered our first governmental events in a very good spirit of cooperation. In 2014, President Gauck came to France, and we had we have very good experience, joint initiative mm-hmm. in France that were shared. And at the same time, there was a lot of ongoing work with the academic circles, with schools, through the OFAGE. And I think that's we set the tune of the commemoration in 2014 in a way that was, of course, to look back, but also to see what kind of how this commemoration could nurture today's reflection on you know, contemporary issue. 2014 was the time where Christopher Clark published his book, and where the crisis started in Syria and in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And here the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I mean Mr. Steinmeier, clearly used this commemoration to address contemporary issues. That was very impressive, and I was really interested to see how Germany used the past to look at present challenge, thing which we did not really do at that time. In 2014, we were looking at the past, in our villages, and our losses, and mourning, and doing archive work. Mm-hmm. We didn't address contemporary crisis at the light of
First War of the past. But that's something that is changing, because as I understood, French President Emmanuel Macron announced lately the organization of a great, really a huge commemorative event in Paris, mm-hmm. on the day of the 100th anniversary of the armistice, that is on 11 November. As I saw on the internet, 84 heads of state from all around the world are going to come to Paris. They are invited. And the objective of this event, but maybe you would like to say a few words about this, is not only to commemorate the end of First World War, the end that is on the Western Front, but also to initiate a discussion on a broader discussion on world governance and help reshape the institutions of world governance. So President Emmanuel Macron obviously helps to benefit from the dynamism and the visibility of the century in order to launch a discussion, a debate, and as well as a political agenda. So I'd like to know what is actually going to happen, what place will be left to history and historical debates at this event, and what place will these new debates have in the Paris Peace Forum?
So there are several events taking place in Paris in November. We are organizing most of them, and so we have had this conversation with the president last fall, and he asked us to design an international ceremony in Paris to gather most of the countries that were involved in the Great War. So this is something we are working on. This is actually the reason why I was in Berlin today, and to discuss this morning with advisor of the Mrs. Merkel, to explain what we are planning, expecting, and doing, because there is an international commemoration in Paris. But as you said, our president, think that the commemoration might be useful in a way to address contemporary issues a bit, like Mr. Steinmeier did in 2014. Say, okay, commemoration is important, but what can we do, or how can we use it to improve ourselves, let's say, or maybe to get a better understanding of problems we have today? A lot of diplomats use this sleepwalkers concept now in international conference, which is, again, Christopher Clark's book. The General Secretary of the United Nations said a few months in a speech, let's not be sleepwalkers. That was a clear reference to Christopher Clark's book and to the crisis of 1914. But so the president wanted this gathering to be useful and constructive. And he said clearly, I'm not inviting 100 heads of states to Paris if we don't find a way to address contemporary issues. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, he has had a small team working at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to design a new forum, a new conference, which I would say is a mix of Davos and the COP.
The COP, you mean?
Yes, the environmental conference, which mix some public, government, civil society, NGO, business community, local governments. And I think that that's where he established the connection between the legacy of what happened 100 years ago, the failure of the first organization of the League of Nations, and that is today a doomed institution, but which started something. So that's clearly his idea. And then the team in charge of the thinking and designing the initiative worked out the Paris Forum, which will be organized every year. So it's going to be an annual conference in Paris to discuss governance issues. So the idea is quite simple. It's really to address what is new items, new agenda, new experience, new thinking about global governance, or governance, not global, but governance at different level, because as you are aware, we have problem of governance inside countries, in large regional organization, and at the global stage. There is a sort of, we have problem and crisis at all stages. So the idea is to gather some government leaders, but also former government leaders with experience, NGO from all continents, to for 3 days in Paris, and it will start in the afternoon of November 11th, just after the commemoration. So we will have large cultural events on the 10th, in the morning of the 11th, ceremonies, and in the afternoon, the official launching of the Forum de Paris. That will then be organized every year in November to gather this community, this mix of people that can have a positive impact and influence on the way we run the international stage.
May I ask you one last question before concluding this podcast? Is it Paris Peace Forum, is it something that you anticipated in your report of 2011,
I would say that's a good surprise. What I tried to do in 2014, I tried to organize an international gathering in Sarajevo. So I did not succeed. That was something I was not able to do, because nobody wanted to go back to Sarajevo. So we created a foundation with our budget and the support of EU. We did a sort of cultural event for 1 week in Sarajevo in June 24. But that was clearly with no political leaders except from the Balkans. So that was, you know, Sarajevo was seen as a hostile environment to address peace issues, and so that was not a success. We did an international cultural event, but not what I had in mind. We were not able to have consensus on this. So I'm very pleased, actually, that a political gathering using the commemoration to address strong messages to the international community. That's what the Paris Forum is about. I don't know if there will be a declaration or a resolution. I think it's more about experiences, talking to each other,
creating
bringing new items on the agenda, new thinking. That's why this mix is interesting. But that's very important, that people think the commemoration is, I mean, a lot of people think the commemoration is a waste of time. And it is not a waste of time, because it creates connection, it creates cultural cooperation, intellectual exchanges, confronting cultural experience between France, Australia, Russia, Balkans, Germany, Italy, America, Canada. That's not a waste of time. It's about international cooperation also. Now we have with the Paris Forum the last missing piece, I think, of the commemoration, which was to go more on a political scale. Some countries will disagree with this approach of commemoration. Our British colleagues I often say when they go, they leave the politics at the entrance of the cemeteries, and it's only about remembrance mm-hmm. and paying tribute to losses. I think that's not what we try to do. So here we are getting in more a political approach of mm-hmm. the commemoration mm-hmm. in a way, in a sense that it's not only about, again, paying tribute to soldiers, young soldiers who lost their life for their country, but about trying to explain that this tragedy was a tragedy and that everything should be done to avoid war, conflict, and that we have to create solutions to avoid war mm-hmm. and to strengthen our political organization at the local, regional, national and international level to end war and to facilitate peace. That's so it's a very good symbol, I mm-hmm. think, mm-hmm. And it's a very good surprise for me. And great. It's not my idea.
I assume that you will be talking about this subject on in our conference, which with the name of Winning Peace Conference, will take place in October 2018 here in Berlin at the German Federal Foreign Office on the 11th and 12th of October. Registration information can be found on our website, win-peace-conference.berlin. And thank you very much, really, for this very interesting discussion, Joseph Simer. I just wanted to say just that you are the director of the Mission du Centenaire, Centenary Partnership Program. It was a great pleasure to have this conversation with
you. Thank you. It was difficult in English, but I tried to do my best.
You did fantastically.
Thank you, and good luck for the conference.
Thank you. We will have a few more podcasts coming in the next few days with Australians, historian John Beaumont, American historian Jennifer Keane, Russian journalist Michael Zugar, and way more to come. Thank you.